Translation, after you received that benediction and I disappeared, you engaged yourself in sex to have a son like me and I fulfilled your desire. So purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. According to the Sanskrit dictionary Amarakosha, sex life is also called Gramya Dharma, material desire. But in spiritual life, this Gramya Dharma, the material desire for sex, is not very much appreciated. If one has a tinge of attachment for the material enjoyments of eating, sleeping, mating and defending, one is not Nishkanchana. But one should really be Nishkanchana. Therefore, one should be free from the desire to beget a child like Krishna by sexual enjoyment. This is indirectly hinted at in this verse. Okay, very interesting verse. Has quite a few deep imports. And we'll just discuss a few things based on our humble realization. And the first understanding that we need to have in this movement is that we are Kripa Siddhas. We are entirely dependent on the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. There is a need for endeavor, but the endeavor is complemented immensely by the parampara. We are Kripa Siddhas. That understanding has to be in the minds of all devotees. We don't quite operate by our own strengths, by dependence. We operate and we can be very successful if we depend. And the greater the dependence, greater would be the success in this movement. So that's the first premise that one has to understand while they are in the movement. That we are dependents and following instructions and depending on Srila Prabhupada, and He will lift us up. That is the whole basis of our existence. We are not sadhana siddhas. This doesn't quite mean that we should be negligent in terms of our own endeavor for our ability to focus and our ability to put in efforts. But our own efforts are completely incapable, insufficient, and have no relevance whatsoever in being able to grant the fruit of Krishna consciousness or Krishna prema, which has been granted to us by Lord Chaitanya. No. Even if it is 192 rounds, no. That understanding has to be there. Because what has been given to us is far beyond any kind of endeavor that is possible. Any kind of endeavor. Any kind of consciousness, it's far beyond. It's a gift. It's a gift. It's a great gift, and it's being given in benevolence. And this understanding has to be there, which is the premise, and this is our strength, that we are Kripa Siddhas. Now, the next position of a devotee is to be able to understand how to position themselves to receive Kripa. That is the endeavor. That's the whole process of Krishna consciousness, is to ultimately reach the point of being able to position ourselves to receive mercy. That's Krishna consciousness. That's exactly the teaching of Sriman Mahaprabhu. Now, having said this, no one can really position themselves for mercy or even endeavor if there's no understanding of the goal of Krishna consciousness. The goal of Krishna consciousness is Krishna prema. The goal of Krishna consciousness is chanting Shuddhanam. Shuddhanam is the name of Krishna invoked in Sri Vrindavan Dham as the devotees in Vrindavan would call upon Him. They have complete understanding of the mellow of relationship. The Sambandha Gyan is complete in the spiritual sky. The devotees who have attained Bhava Bhakti, they have attained complete Sambandha Gyan. They have complete understanding of the details of their relationship. Sambandha is complete. When Sambandha is complete, action which follows, Abhideya, is also perfect. And until Sambandha is incomplete, then the actions would be based on the other identities one establishes in this material world. This is the real challenge. The idea is, the real challenge faced by devotees of this movement is that they have identity crisis, many types of them. They have a crisis in identities. This is the real issue. They have to be able to distinguish what is manifest and perceptive through their physical senses versus what is being established as truth by Shastra. They have to learn to distinguish. So Krishna says this in Bhagavad Gita 4.9, where He says, you can't really come to Me unless you understand Me through tattva. And those who understand Me through tattva would come to Me. And then you have to approach a tattva darshi who has very sound knowledge of tattva, who has realized knowledge and who is practicing it, who is living the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then one gets to understand what is tattva and what is the import of tattva. Now, when one does that, then the fostering and the strengthening of the eternal identity of being a servant of Krishna becomes more and more a reality that is accessible. So the issue which is being talked about here in this verse is not so much about sex desire. It's one of the many things that affects devotees. The issue which is being talked about, the real essence, is that devotees have an identity crisis. They identify with the body. I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm a husband, I'm a wife, I'm a son, which is all reality, but it is temporary reality. These identities compete with the identity of being a servant of Krishna. And when these identities compete with the identity of being a servant of Krishna, and they overwhelm the identity of being surrendered to Krishna as a servant and wanting to know the Nitya Swarup and wanting to know their eternal Sambandha, everything goes down. So Srila Prabhupada is giving a straight warning. He is saying, even if your desire of wanting to engage in sex for the purpose of having Krishna as your child, it is dangerous. Don't do that. It's not approved. Don't even try that, because even that is dangerous. You will move away from the goal of Krishna consciousness. Get advanced to the point where Sambandha is completely known, and that Sambandha is what is going to qualify you to have a relationship with Krishna and to be able to serve Him. And that Sambandha is going to be granted by the holy names. So we start with Adav Shraddha, we go all the way up to Srimad Prema. This is the process. And the process requires dependence. This process requires understanding. This process requires dependence on the spiritual master. This is our situation, is a situation of dependence. And the more a devotee positions themselves with a simple mood of dependence, they're going to get picked up. This is like a man or woman who is sinking, who is going to flay their arms, trying to, you know, kind of swim on their own. Krishna is going to look upon them, Mahaprabhu is going to look upon them and say, maybe you are trying, you know, maybe you have the capacity. The greater the dependence, internal dependence, greater would be success in our mission. Now, what does this mean? We also mean this by way of endeavor. Internally, we are completely dependent on the mercy of Mahaprabhu. Externally, we endeavor as if it depends on us. This is a two principle. It is actually quite diurnal. It is contradictory. This is spiritual reality. Spiritual reality can be very contradictory. You can have Navayavanam and you can have Purana Purusha. Krishna can be glorified as extraordinarily youthful, and he is also glorified as the oldest, Purana Purusha. This is spiritual reality, and these contradictions can coexist in harmony because they are spiritual. Spiritual realities can coexist in harmony. It's a fact. Now, the second spiritual reality, which is observable in our movement, is that the most advanced of renunciates, the Goswamis, who are the foundation, and in fact our movement today is being inspired by a group of few very, very advanced pure devotees who had tasted Shuddhanam, who desired to sit under trees, not even the same kind of trees. They kept changing the trees every night, and then they wrote down the realizations. Those realizations are the foundation and the inspiration for our movement today. This was 500 years back. So now we understand the import of service. Service depends on being able to chant the holy names. If the chanting is not proper, service is not going to be proper, planning is going to go awry, everything is going to go down if the chanting is not there. If chanting is very pakka, then we have an opportunity to place ourselves in the hands of Lord Chaitanya and become pure instruments. And then he can conquer whatever he wants. His orders have been given 500 years back. His orders have been given 500 years back that my name would be spread in every village and town. That order carries power. That order carries power. Whoever positions themselves to enter into this movement, to take on that order upon their shoulders, will receive power, because that order carries power. We have to understand that that is the way we operate. We receive mercy, and what is that mercy? That mercy is practically the ability to move forward. The spiritual master gives instructions at the time of initiation, saying, chant 16 rounds. Are we even capable of chanting 16 rounds? No. But the spiritual master's instructions carry power. One who takes up that instruction very seriously receives the power to chant 16 rounds. It's not dependent on us. It's dependent on Krishna. So going back to the Acharyas, the movement 500 years back, the Acharyas, they are extraordinary renunciates. But what was the extraordinary meditation which they had? This is again a spiritual reality. They had completely renounced all forms of existence. They had no connection with the material world. They were meditating on the loving affairs of the divine couple. This is a spiritual contradiction. It is a contradiction, but it can coexist in harmony because it is spiritual. One can completely be renounced and meditate on spiritual reality when they are completely qualified. The Sambandha is well known. And that spiritual reality could be quite contradictory to what is being prevented in this world. Meditating on mundane affairs causes contamination. Meditating on spiritual affairs by qualification causes purification. You see, this is again a spiritual reality. Contradictions, but they coexist in harmony. This is diunital. This is a philosophical principle in spiritual reality. It does exist in harmony. Now, one has to understand that what is it which Srila Prabhupada is trying to convey here about sex life? What is it which he is talking about? Because we have our movement which has transformed itself for most part into grihasthas. And Krishna says, according to religious principles, it is, I am sex life according to religious principles. But devotees have to understand, we are not practicing religion, by the way. We are not. We are not practicing religion. We are practicing a transcendental reality. And transcendental reality is exactly what it is. Religious principles are below that. So we don't want to get confused thinking that it's okay. We don't want to. So what is the kind of goal setting that a devotee ought to have in this movement? The goal setting of this devotee in this movement is very simple. They have to focus on the five most important principles of devotional service. What is it which is going to support me in being able to foster a deeper level of connection with Krishna? What is it which is going to allow me to have a deeper level of sambandha? Because without that sambandha, my own actions will not be proper. I will never know what to do without sambandha. So what are the five principles? Our acharyas have given in Chaitanya Charitamrita that the first and the most important principle of goal setting for a devotee is to adhere to a certain process which works. And this is a process which has been time tested immemorial. It is in all scriptures. The first principle is sadhu sangha. Because being with the sadhu, one has the ability to be able to receive a particle of faith which is interred in the sadhu's heart, which is of such potency that that faith will enter into our ears and conquer our hearts and destroy our material conditioning. Sri Guru Charana Padma, right? Sri Guru Charana Padma, which is right there, which talks about this particular song where it says, Sri Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Koriyakya. The sadhu's words has the ability to come and shatter the consciousness, the chitta, and transform our chitta. That is the purpose of sadhu sangha. So what is a sadhu? Who is a sadhu? A sadhu, according to scripture, is one who has already attained the swarup lakshana of complete dependence on Krishna. He's completely surrendered. But sadhus are also those who are endeavoring to reach that position. So what we need to do is to be able to look at who is endeavoring for perfection in chanting the holy names. Who can enthuse us? Who is going to inspire us to be able to take up the beads and chant? That is our qualification. We need to be able to observe that. If sadhus are not able to inspire us to chant, then we have to reconsider what is the definition. Because our mission is to chant. We really have to be inspired to chant. We have to be able to take up the chanting of the holy names. We can be inspired in so many different ways, but we have to be inspired ultimately to be able to chant. Srila Jiva Goswami, he introduced the chanting of mantra into practically every process that we take up. If you're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, it is to get enthused to chant. If you're serving, it is to get enthused to chant. If you're worshipping Sri Murti, it is to get enthused to chant. If you're going to Mathura Vas, you're staying in Vrindavan, you're going to Mayapur, it is to chant. So our basis is to chant. So a sadhu is someone where it all starts and which is absolutely adequate to give every other effect of being able to adhere to the process, is someone who is able to inspire us to chant. That is the definition of sadhu. And he is able to inspire us to chant because he is dependent on Krishna. That is his swarup lakshana. The external qualities may be there and it is evolving. It could evolve. The external qualities could come. The secondary characteristics can slowly evolve as we go on. But that is the nature of a sadhu. Someone who can inspire us to chant. And that is the purpose of a mission as well. So, the goal and the process of Krishna consciousness is sadhu sangha, namakirtana in association with sadhus, Bhagavat Shravana, which is to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam and keep in touch with Srimad Bhagavatam on a daily basis. And then it is also for us to be able to engage in Mathura Vas. This is Mathura Vas. This is Mathura Vas. Wherever Srila Prabhupada established deities, it is Mathura Vas. Our business is to understand that this is Mathura Vas. There's no need to move to Mayapur. We go to Mayapur, we go to Vrindavan to surcharge ourselves so that we could come back and engage in the mission of Lord Chaitanya. Our deliverance is not bhajan. We'll have to write it down. Our deliverance is bhajan sincerely so that we can serve. And service is not necessarily in the dham. It's going to be outside. This is mission of Lord Chaitanya. So we are kripa siddhas. We go from adav shraddha all the way to bhava completely on mercy, kripa. This understanding should be there with the devotees. We should have this understanding. So the more we endeavor to position ourselves to serve Lord Nityananda in his endeavor to please Lord Chaitanya, then we automatically position ourselves to move from one stage to the other. It's an organic process. It's a very organic process. And then greed that is required for advancement comes automatically when one has experiences. It is a lack of experiences which is demotivating. And there can be no experiences if there is no sincere chanting and no service. Experiences come out of service. That's the reason why Sankirtan devotees and many others, you know, they have so much realization in terms of what it is, because they go out their service, and the service themselves give them very deep realizations on what it is. It's a wonderful experience just to be able to chant and to serve and then receive experiences. After reading, after that, after chanting and serving, we then come to Srimad Bhagavatam, and Srimad Bhagavatam qualifies our experiences. Shastra qualifies our experiences. We come, and then we get qualified, saying, okay, these experiences are bona fide, and they are something which to aspire for. So, coming back to the main issue, the process requires the setting of goals and understanding of goals. If our goals are based on mundane religion, then we are going to be in deep trouble. Our goals have to be that which is aligned with the conclusion of the Acharyas. Our goal is to attain Krishna Prema. Our goal is to chant Shuddhanam. It is very clear that to be able to chant Shuddhanam, one has to go through different stages of purification, and that purification in itself is going to reveal our eternal sambandha. We're going to understand our relationship with Krishna. The more we understand our relationship with Krishna, better would be our ability to chant. Sevon mukehi jihvado. All our service begins with chanting, ends with chanting. Our experiences are chanting, and the fruits and the results of the entire process is going to be given by japa. It's going to be given by nam. It is nama for us, and there's really nothing else. We are merely strengthening it. We are merely strengthening it. My endeavor, personally, as a sadhaka, whatever little I do, is I'm not a shrutidhar, neither I'm a shastraga. I'm not. I have no knowledge beyond what I speak, a little bit which I know. And what I know is what inspires me to chant. That is it. And I really don't care about anything else. I really don't care. I don't want to pose as anything else other than wanting to chant. That is it. And this is the objective. There's no distraction in the mind if there is no other objective other than wanting to sit and chant. There's really nothing else. The more we endeavor towards that particular activity which has been given by Mahaprabhu, automatically there is progression. And that progression itself is organic, and we receive all the results that we need to do. So this particular aspect of loba, practically the greed for attaining higher states of sambandha gyan in the service of the divine couple, will come at later and stages when we refine our consciousness. Even that is organic. The greed happens as well. And the greed happens by coming in touch with Srimad Bhagavatam. The greed happens by coming in touch with real sadhus who carry that greed in their heart, and they're able to deposit it in our hearts. This is quite an organic process. It's very simple and very straightforward to follow. Now, coming to the topic of today, which is the topic of sex desire, and whether it is okay to have sex desire, and whether what happens with that, we have to first understand that sex desire is a stimulus which is going to happen if you have a body and you're conscious and you're in touch with the objects of the senses, and our consciousness is within the material realm. It is going to happen. It's a fact of life. There's going to be stimulus. It is going to be there. But the question again becomes is that we don't want to set goals around sex life, which is what the issue is in this verse. He's mentioning that, Srila Prabhupada. Don't set goals around sex life. Do not couch it. Don't cover it saying that I'm going to try and have a son like Krishna. Don't do it, because it's dangerous. Because you are acting according to the principles of religion, yes, but you are not acting according to the transcendental rules of what you need. Your transcendental reality is that your identity is going to be revealed when we cross the material ocean. So don't set up these things within the material ocean. That is the instruction that is being given by Srila Prabhupada. It's a very straightforward instruction. Grahasthas will have children, and it is wonderful. But is there a guarantee that every time we have a child, the child is going to turn out to be a Vaishnav? No guarantees whatsoever. No guarantees. What is guaranteed, however, as parents, is that we have the ability to set up an environment where such a soul can survive and move into Krishna consciousness. We have the ability to offer the environment. We don't have the ability to draw a certain soul. We can desire to have a Vaishnav in our families. No guarantees whatsoever. The sex act, once it is done, is done. The time to change and bring in a soul is at the time of conception. It is at the time of conception. Garbha Adana. Adana is conception. Garbha is the womb. Impacting of the womb by the fertilized egg is conception. That Adana is the time to actually draw in a soul. Expert Vedic astrologers have the ability to draw the astrological chart of that particular movement. They can calculate it backwards. And they can look at to see if the soul that has come in from an animal womb in the previous janma, or is it a human womb? Is it elevated or is it depressed? Which loka? All of this information is available at the time of conception. So that conception, the moment of conception, is so important in being able to draw the right kind of entity. And that's the reason why Srila Gopalabhatta Goswami has authored the Satkriya Saradipika, which is the book of samskaras for the grahasthas, where they would be able to maintain the consciousness that they need to maintain to be able to draw a kind of soul which is capable or has a good chance of taking up Krishna consciousness. Provided we provide the environment, the soul can come and they have the opportunity to get enthused. Now, today is Ekadasi. A very special, very, very special fasting that is being done by us is Ekadasi. There's such emphasis on Ekadasi within a movement. I mean, on the fasting. But we do feast quite a lot on Ekadasi. That's a different story altogether. But then the emphasis is on fasting. And there's a reason. And the reason is that there are different types of karma yoga in this world. And in different types of karma yoga, the moment the karma yoga begins in terms of action, the destruction also begins of that action. It's a fact. The moment something is done in terms of action, destruction also begins because it is within the material realm. So there are opposing forces of creation, which is action, and destruction. And both of these move together. There's always an opposite principle in the material world. The opposite principle of the material world, which destroys, is Kala, the time factor. The time factor destroys. So, by fasting on Ekadasi, we are strengthening the ability for abstinence. Today, Ekadasi Tithi has the ability to give us the strength for abstinence. Abstinence from all kinds of wanting to enjoy and have sense pleasure in this world. It strengthens the principle. It strengthens it. It's an extraordinarily important aspect of our Siddhanta. It is very important for us to have Ekadasi fasting. The more serious we are with Ekadasi fasting, greater would be the ability to control the mind. Greater would be the ability to control the mind. This is granted because this is the way the universe is constructed. There are opposing principles. Ekadasi strengthens the opposing principle for the propensity of engaging in pleasure hunting in this world. It strengthens it. It's a very important precept. So we need to understand that the system that's been given by our acharyas is actually quite comprehensive. It is comprehensive where they have actually accounted for everything. They don't really ask us to fast on everything. They're just very clear. Ekadasi, don't miss your fast. Festival days, don't miss your fast on certain days. Why? Because fasting on Ekadasi practically strengthens the ability to control senses, control the mind. It does. That is the way the universe is constructed. This is the power of Ekadasi. The more serious a practitioner is in following Ekadasi, greater would be their ability to fix their mind. And again, this is dependent on your health. I'm just making a comment in terms of you have to take it in the context of what is possible by your physical condition, but I'm just giving some precepts of why it is being done at a much higher level. As why is it being done? It does foster it. There are many kathas that inspire us for Ekadasi. There are so many different kathas. It is a day of Lord Hari. It is a day where grains are not to be touched. But the precept of fasting is, it is opposing the whole concept of pleasure. It does. It does. Because it will strengthen the resolve. It will strengthen the resolve of the person to be able to control their senses. So, the point we are trying to make here is that this verse is not so much about curtailing sex life. This verse is more about setting goals. What is the point for someone who comes in touch with Lord Chaitanya's movement to have such an insignificant goal which is well within this material world? So our goal setting has to be carefully examined in this movement. Every individual, whatever be the varna, whatever be the ashram, has to have very clear goals. The goal is to be able to chant Shuddhanam. And they have to have some clarity in terms of what is Shuddhanam. They have to have some clarity in understanding the goal. They also have to have some clarity in terms of the process. What is the process for being able to chant Shuddhanam? Process for being able to chant Shuddhanam is Sadhu Sangha. Process for being able to chant Shuddhanam is Namakirtan, along with Sadhu Sangha. Along with Sadhu Sangha and Namakirtan, unless one has Sadhu Sangha and Namakirtan, they cannot understand Bhagavat Shravana. Bhagavat Shravana, being able to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, is not going to take place unless there is Sadhu Sangha and Namakirtan. It is a fact. The greater our sambandha, greater would be the understanding of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It would begin speaking to us. So, Namakirtan and Sadhu Sangha is going to foster and strengthen sambandha. And then Srimad Bhagavatam will enhance it even further by showing us what the experience would be if one has deeper sambandha gyan. And then as we go further, one can engage in the process of deity worship. The Pancha Samskara process of initiation, which is being followed by us in general, which Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also wrote about, one of the limbs of that is Ijya, for us to be able to worship the deity. The deity worship is such a powerful way for us to be able to cultivate and foster and strengthen sambandha gyan. That is the whole purpose. It is all about sambandha. The moment we serve the deity, we are enhancing our ability to enhance and strengthen our sambandha with Krishna. Krishna sambandha. And when the guru is giving the deity to the disciple, we saw this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Mahaprabhu gives the Govardhan Shila to Srila Raghunath Das Goswami to worship. That was to foster sambandha gyan. The guru giving the deity to worship is practically the action of being able to increase sambandha in the hearts of the disciple. Srila Prabhupada did it in a different way, given the fact that he had this worldwide preaching very clearly in his mind. He practically associated and connected the devotees in this movement to specific deities who were situated in the yatras where they were asked to serve. So if you're in UK, if you're in the manor, Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda is the where you develop your sambandha. Then that is exactly what Srila Prabhupada did. He practically connected the devotees to the local deities, and that is how he increased the sambandha. But in tradition, the process of initiation involves receiving a deity from the guru as well. The guru gives a deity. That is a traditional concept in those days. But our movement, Srila Prabhupada made some practical changes. So the idea is to have and focus on this particular goal of Shuddhanam, and to have a focus on being able to properly engage in Sadhu Sangha, properly engage in Nam Kirtan, properly engage in the prospect of Bhagavad Shravana, and then to position ourselves in life so that this can happen quite naturally. Srila Prabhupada says this, you have to come to a normal condition of life. The normal condition of life is where we are able to increase our sambandha gyan in quite a smooth manner. And that is to come and touch with devotees in a proper way. So the idea is, the distraction for the grahasthashram is very, very high. I'm a grahastha, I can speak to it, I can speak out of experience. The distraction for the grahastha ashram is quite high, and the reason is that we exist outside and we are trying to make ends meet by working in the outside world. And the distraction in the outside world is such that there would be stimulus. The devotees who are outside and who are striving outside and they're struggling to make ends meet, to make the grahastha ashram move forward, will constantly be stimulated by the environment which is outside. And that stimulus would not be for Bhagavad Shravana. That stimulus will not be for Namakirtana. It would not be for Sadhu Sangha. It would be for going higher up in the corporate ladder. It would be for achieving various other objectives that one can set up in an outside environment. I came from that background, so I can speak to it out of experience. That environment is quite intense. If you want to survive, then you have to ensure that you are able to climb up. You know, I started out my career with Pricewaterhouse, and I was a management consultant. And when I started out my career, one of the things which I found out was that if you don't get promoted in 3 years, they let go. They practically fire you because if you don't get promoted, you are let go. So you can't really be the steady, consistent performer who does nothing for several years and is able to cruise along. You know, you can't really do that. And that's what the biggest problem is. That's a huge challenge for grihasthas because they have careers to take care of. And if they don't do it, they're going to get let go. You know, this is at least the situation in America. I'm sure it's a place with every other part of the world as well these days. The point which we want to make here is that that stimulus and the need to survive in the material world overtakes the need for the main principles of bhakti. It does. It overwhelms a person. It is all the more so in cities. It overwhelms a person. So the main objective of anyone who is even working outside trying to make a living is to have a certain kind of lifestyle or consciousness, or ultimately to reach that lifestyle in a few years, 10 years, 15 years, choose your own dollar amount, choose your own pound amount that you have to attain so that you can ultimately reach a point where you don't really have to be in such an environment. That has to be an idea. There has to be an idea and focus of simplicity. Simplicity is Vaishnavism. We keep hearing about it. But what is that simplicity which is required? What is the practical way to understand it? The more complex the material situation, it is going to require the mode of passion to fix it. It is. It's a fact. The more complex something is, an enterprise is, the more you have to do, the greater would be the need for passion. The moment we get into the material mode of passion, then our desires may not be fulfilled. We will get into the mode of ignorance. That is the next stage. Because there's frustration. Frustration will lead to the mode of ignorance. So the cascading down from the mode of goodness, where we start out early in the morning during japa, right down to the mode of goodness, happens quite naturally in the material world. It happens quite well if you're in the wrong environment. So one has to be very wary that this is happening. So our strength is the mode of goodness. We take off from the platform of goodness. The platform of goodness, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Ji Ki, Jai Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ji Ki. So, we are taking off from the mode of goodness. We are. When we have to take off from the mode of goodness, how can you maintain the mode of goodness when our situation is complex? It's not possible. So devotees have to endeavor to simplify, because the mode of goodness thrives in a simple environment. Simplicity is Vaishnavism, because the platform for Vaishnavism is given by the mode of goodness. Mode of goodness thrives in a simple environment where there is not too much endeavor to make things happen. That's why country living, rural life is mode of goodness, because it's all quite natural. It doesn't affect you. It doesn't contaminate you the way anything else does. So devotees outside have to endeavor. Devotees who are in the grihastha ashram have to endeavor to simplify. If we don't simplify, we are going to be in passion. And if we are in passion, nothing transcendental is accessible. And passion can turn into the mode of ignorance in a flash, just like that. It degrades. Normally, that is the course of the way it works. It does degrade, because all desires are not going to get granted. And then there's frustration, there's anger, because there's attachment. This is big trouble. So those of us who are endeavoring to reach out to those who are endeavoring to work outside to make a living, we have to assist devotees in being able to set goals. They should not be operating on goals that are being stimulated by the environment which is existing outside. We should be able to assist them in setting up goals which are Krishna conscious. Krishna conscious goals can be set up for the whole lifetime. This process is awesome, and it is quite overwhelming, because it's a 40-year run. It's not 1 year. It's not 40 days. Many cases, it's 50 years. We have to consistently maintain an environment of simplicity and lack of complexity so that we can really survive. And that is what gets really troublesome. So we have to constantly endeavor to strengthen ourselves by simplifying life. And simplifying life and endeavoring to be able to have quality sadhu sangha, quality namakirtana, quality Bhagavad Shravana, and then to also be able to ultimately be able to render service to the deity and then reside in an environment which is like a dham. This objective has to be very clear in the hearts of devotees. If they don't do that, then they're really falling off from what is really required. This is nitya karma. There's really no question of deviation from this principle and the idea which is being given by our acharyas. There is really no question of deviation. So if those of us who are in brahmacharya ashram want to become grihasthas, they have to have this objective clearly lined out, saying, I need to be able to get this nitya karma done, and I should endeavor to have a simple life. And that simple life need not necessarily mean that we don't really plug in to the world outside and be successful. It doesn't mean that. But if you're going to be really trying to focus on being successful outside, then you are very much within the material world. And you're going to be moving away. So the goal setting process has to be that I want to engage in nitya karma, I want to reposition myself, I want to be in the world, I want to exist in the world, I don't want to be off the world even if I'm in the world. That should be the goal. And that's a transcendental goal setting process. And sometimes it can get very subtle and very complex. This is one instance. This is an instance in the Srimad Bhagavatam verse. I want a son like Krishna. Sounds so devotional. Sounds so devotional in the overall objective. But Srila Prabhupada is saying, you're setting a goal which is far below what we are supposed to be doing. So we are not against sex life. We are not against sex life, no. We don't want to be. We don't want to have unhealthy psychological perceptions of what is good and what is bad. That is not what it is. What we are against is in setting goals which are far, far less than what is supposed to be set. If we set the goal of engaging in nitya karma, and if we focus on nitya karma, then life would start arranging itself. Because our process is extraordinarily potent. when we chant the holy names, when we sit for Gayatri, when we worship the deities, when we serve the Guru, when we serve Mahaprabhu, we automatically are becoming and having access to immense resources for the future. Our future is being created as we serve. So it's so important to reflect on the main goal of why we are doing what we are doing, and especially so if you are in a distracting environment. And that would allow us to remain consistent with being able to advance year after year and without being affected. Example from the preceptors. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was extraordinarily highly situated. But because he had this objective in Deepa Nyaya Sambandha Gyan, and he wanted to reinstall Gauranga Dham, what did he do? He practically allowed the government, British government in India, to demote him. He said, I want to be demoted so that I can come closer to Krishnanagar, and from Krishnanagar, I can work on the goal of setting up the Dham. He did this. Why did he do it? Because he was operating on a deeper level of Sambandha. If the deeper level of Sambandha is not there, then we are going to be operating on the Sambandha that we have. And what is the Sambandha that we have? That Sambandha has to do with this physical body. It's either that or this. There's this haziness. And this haziness actually takes us away from achieving goals. So it's very important to understand what is the goal, reflect on the process, reposition life, even if it's a 10-year haul, 20-year haul, reposition life, taking care of responsibilities, ultimately to reach this platform where the Nitya Karma gets done very nicely. If we don't do it, we're going to be casualties. We are. It's guaranteed. We are going to be casualties. This goes back to positioning ourselves, simplifying our lives so that we can receive mercy. We are Kripa Siddhas. At least the fellow who is drowning should have the capability of being able to position himself and his body in such a way that the person who is picking him up can pick him up easily. Isn't it sensible? It's just common sense. If someone is drowning, why would he make it so difficult for the person who is coming to pick him up? And we make it difficult. Why so? Because we don't have an understanding of the goal, we don't have an understanding of the process, and we don't plan according to keeping that in center. Our issue is the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Our issue is the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. For most part, we don't know how to eat, sleep, mate, defend, keeping Krishna in the center. The process is simple. Our issue is the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Knowing how to do it is to first have a centered goal and then proceeding further to plan. Planning is required. Without planning, we are not going to go anywhere. This is not an inert process where it's going to take place just like that. Our acharyas planned. If you go to Mayapur, behind Advaita Bhavan, not in Shantipur, just very close to Shiva Sangan, there is a spot. Srila Prabhupada was found in that spot by the pujari, lamenting, crying, that he has no qualification whatsoever to come to the West and to preach in English. He used to lament, cry, and call upon the holy names before he actually embarked on this journey. He was really crying before he came here, that he didn't know how to do this. But why did he choose that spot? He chose that spot because the entire Sankirtan movement was planned by Lord Nityananda and Lord Advaita Acharya in that particular spot. There's a potency in that spot for planning. Our acharyas planned. They knew how many mridangas had to be in the Sankirtan party. They knew what kind of songs, what is to be written, what is the exact message that is to be delivered. There's so much planning which is being done by acharya with complete realization that we should also understand that our life requires planning. Every ashram requires planning. There's no doubt about it. You need to plan. We need to constantly understand that we need to position ourselves for the mode of goodness. And the more we position ourselves for the mode of goodness, depending on Krishna, the chanting, the serving the deity, and every other process would automatically get us to that point. Devotees have to understand this, that every time they're chanting, every time they're serving, the improper desires can also get fulfilled. Namaparad, it is going to grant material desires. Why have material desires which are going to incarcerate us further? Who would actually give up the mission of Lord Chaitanya and walk away? Those of us who are just in the morning program, you are chanting so blissfully. Who would want to give this up? Who would want to endanger this process in their lives? Just because you're going to set a goal which is in this material world. And that is how dangerous this world is. It is going to stimulate us to set goals. And the moment you got stimulated by the body, stimulated by the environment, we are done. That's why we need to focus on Shastric reading so that we get stimulated by Shastric goals. And the moment we start living according to Shastra, all problems are going to go away. Our problems are because we are not focused on the goal. If we have problems, it is that. The gold is completely capable of taking care of everything. Krishna says that. I'll preserve what you have, I'll carry what you lack. He will provide the environment. He will do everything. Because we are Kripa Siddhas. Okay? So I'm going to stop here. And I'm going to quickly summarize. And then we'll see if there are any comments from the Vaishnavas assembled here. So we started out by understanding that we are Kripa Siddhas. We went on to understand that Srila Prabhupada is practically giving an indication here that aspiring for sex life, or aspiring even for children and expanding the family, is nothing but sex life. It is. It's a fact. Then Srila Prabhupada is giving that particular warning that even if you aspire for Krishna to be your son, it's dangerous. Don't do that. Instead, he's saying focus on the Bhagavad Shravana, focus on the process. It would ultimately give you sambandha, and then you would be able to understand who Krishna is in your relationship, because everything else can be incarcerating. So then we spoke about what is the objective of our movement. The objective of every sadhaka in this movement is to ultimately chant Shuddhanam. Shuddhanam is the nam chanted with complete knowledge of sambandha, our relationship with Krishna. That is the Shuddhanam. We are chanting with complete knowledge, and that nam has love in it. When we chant, we call him out with complete sambandha, and that is Shuddhanam. That is our objective. The objective of Shuddhanam is to be attained by Nitya Karma. Nitya Karma includes 5 components. It includes Sadhu Sangha as the primary, most important component. It includes Namakirtana, which is association with Sadhu and engaging in Namakirtana. It includes being able to engage in Bhagavat Shravana, again in relationship with the Sadhu, to understand our experiences if we engage in Namakirtana and service with Sadhu. Bhagavat Shravana, and then there is the worship of deities, and then there is Mathura Vas, the aspiration for wanting to live in the Dham. These are the objectives of how to attain Shuddhanam. This is going to increase the sambandha for every devotee who takes it up quite seriously. And then we saw about the distraction that occurs in the material world. The distraction that occurs in the material world is because we are stimulated by the material environment, and we establish identities that are completely disconnected from the mission of Krishna consciousness. So it's very important for those who are in touch with the material environment more profoundly to have a plan for the future. And that plan should include the component of wanting to simplify. If we don't simplify, we will not be in the mode of goodness, and that's what is dangerous about this world. We have to simplify so that there's no complexity in trying to make things meet and make things work. The objective has to be there. We could start out with a complex environment and then slowly have aspirations. The process of chanting and the process of seva can actually grant our desires for simplification. And that is Trinadapi Sunichena. The verse Mahaprabhu gave us was Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarori Vasayishnuna, Amani Manadena Kirtane Sadahari. Why did he just give us the Sikshashtakam? Why is this supposed to be worn on the head of every chanter in this movement? Is because this verse is telling us, tolerate your environment. I will make the changes. Amani Manadena. Tolerate your environment. Do not have any pride associated with this material world. Amani. Give respect to everyone. And by doing so, we would be able to have Kirtaniya Sadahari. Kirtaniya Sadahari is dependent on Sambandha Gyan. One has deep Sambandha Gyan, then they can do Kirtaniya Sadahari. They can. It is 24/7. They can engage in it. And that is what Mahaprabhu has given us. Mahaprabhu has practically given us a message saying, accept the environment that I'm arranging for you, but have proper aspirations. The aspiration is for chanting Shuddhanam. The aspiration is for Nitya Karma, the 5 important principles of being able to advance towards Shuddhanam. You have these aspirations, you have these desires, and then I will do whatever is required for you to be able to move forward. He's saying this. That is Trinadapi Sunichena. Trinadapi Sunichena is to be able to accept the environment as if Krishna has made arrangements and to act upon it with courage. That is humility. Accept the environment. Don't keep fighting it, saying that, okay, this environment is complex, that environment is complex. Have proper desires and then start accepting the environment while sincerely following the instruction of the Vacharyas. Things will change because we are Kripa Siddhas. They will change. Develop proper desires. This is the message of our Acharyas. It is such a simple, lucid process. It is very simple. We need the mode of goodness. Arrange for the mode of goodness. Very simple. Because it's going to allow you to have Nitya Karma. And in the future, I want to simplify so that I can be more absorbed in the Nitya Karma. And if I'm more absorbed in the Nitya Karma, I have a better way of being able to make advancement into chanting Shuddhanam. Such a simple, such a clear process. There really isn't anything else in our movement. And this is what we are trying to do. This is exactly what we're trying to do, coming to the temple, engaging in pujas, engaging in all kinds of activities. This is ultimately to finally be able to chant the holy names. So I'll stop here with your blessings. And I'm absolutely thrilled in being here. And thank you so much for having me and allowing me to share a few thoughts. And if I've spoken things in a certain mood, which could be offensive or could come out as very aggressive, please forgive me. It was just done in the mood of wanting to simply strengthen my own resolve, and it was my purification. You should simply take it that I was talking to myself. Okay? So I wasn't really addressing you. You made me sit here, so what could I do? Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a very nice class. Just two questions. First question is, we hear sometimes that Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayed for a son who would be like a ray of Vishnu. And we also hear Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said that if I could make Krishna conscious children, then I would have many. So can you just say something about that in relation to this purport where Srila Prabhupada is saying one should be free from the desire to get a child like Krishna? And the second question is, we hear in the prayers of great devotees that they are expressing spiritual aspirations, spiritual desires. And so I'm just wondering, is there scope for someone to have a pure desire to have Krishna as their son because they want to serve Krishna in that way? Why is Vasudeva and Devaki's desire to beget children, Krishna as their child, why is that not pure? I'm just wondering why. And is there scope for someone to have such a pure desire?
Okay, so let's address the first question, which is, we hear about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur aspiring to have someone who can lead this movement. Now, we have to understand, this is what we spoke about earlier on as well, there is transcendental reality. And the transcendental reality is based on deeper levels of Sambandha Gyan. And when there's deeper levels of Sambandha Gyan, then one is operating not so much based on their desires, but they are based on the desires of the parampara, desires of Krishna himself, of Lord Krishna Chaitanya. So we can take several examples. One of the most prominent examples of the difference between being captured by Maya versus being captured by Yoga Maya and having a certain desire is being shown in the way Lord Sri Shambhu, Vaishnavana Metha Shambhu, the greatest of Vaishnavas, Lord Shambhu, Lord Shiva, was completely bewildered, not by Mahamaya. He cannot be bewildered by Lord Mahamaya. The most beautiful goddess Parvati was by his side. He is not bewildered by her. He is transcendently situated. He was bewildered by Yogamaya. He can be bewildered by the internal potency of the Lord. So that bewilderment by internal potency of the Lord, where you find in the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Lord Shiva himself acted as if he displayed mundane sex desire, was because he was actually being, you know, motivated by Yogamaya. And that had so many different, reasons for it. In Srimad Bhagavatam, we read about it. The biggest thing which we have to understand, the difference between Mahamaya and Yogamaya, is that when someone is acting on the basis of Yogamaya, which is to be inspired from within by the super soul, inspired from within by the Acharya Varga, inspired because they have a deeper Sambandha Gyan, that person will not be contaminated by sex desire. There would be no contamination. So you find that in Srimad Bhagavatam, where Lord Shiva, even after going through all of this in his bewilderment and acting as if he was completely bewildered by the sexual impulse, he was not embarrassed. There was no contamination. This embarrassment which comes due to coming in touch with Mahamaya was not there. This embarrassment was not there. He was completely pleased that Krishna bewildered him. You see that in Srimad Bhagavatam. So the point which I'm trying to say is that one can be motivated by two principles. One is the external energy, which is on the bodily platform, and then one on the internal energy, which is the Yogamaya principle. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's position as the seventh Goswami is not an ordinary one. He was chanting 192 rounds, he was writing hundreds of books, and he was practically re-establishing Gauranga's pastimes in Mayapur. So this soul, he was not situated in the mundane existence of wanting to engage and wanting to beget a son for the purpose of his desire. It was motivated from within, he acted upon that impulse. That is the understanding one has to have. This is Yogamaya acting. He's receiving instructions, he's acting upon it. Great devotees are in touch with spiritual reality. They are not in ambiguity in terms of what they ought to do and what they ought not to do. They are not. So that's the understanding that we have to have. He's acting on information. He's acting based on the instructions of Krishna. It is Yogamaya. The other principle of Yogamaya can be seen in Lord Ram's pastime. Who would think that he will get bewildered by a golden deer and go chasing after it? Is it even possible? Is it even conceivable that he wouldn't know that that golden deer is a Rakshasa? Wouldn't Mother Sita know? Wouldn't Lakshman know, who is an expansion? Wouldn't they know? This is Yogamaya. There's a need for pastimes. It happens. It bewilders. So what I'm trying to say is there has to be a little bit of distinguishment in being able to understand actions based on the personality. We have to take that into context. We have to take a lot of things into context to understand, especially situations like you mentioned. That is the first thing that I want to mention about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's getting Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. His son, on the other hand, was a Naishthika Brahmachari. His mission was to practically propagate the mission of Srila Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was not so caught up in the ashram either. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was not caught up in the concept of Varnashram either. He was not so caught up in being a brahmachari, being a sannyasi, or being a grahastha. He was not caught up. He was wanting to demonstrate the principle that if I want to propagate the mission of Lord Chaitanya, the ashram doesn't really matter. I can even get into the different ashram for me to be able to engage in it if it can be guaranteed. So that's the understanding we have to have about Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's statement. That is the second. And then your third question, what was it, Prabhu, if you don't mind? You had another question. Why was Vasudev's and Devaki's...
In the sense that we see great acharyas and devotees are expressing spiritual aspirations and desires.
Right.
So it seems there is scope to have a spiritual desire and to pray to Krishna for that. Even we see here, Ye Prasade Pure Sarva Asha, that spiritual desires are fulfilled. So, I'm just wondering, why is this not a spiritual desire? What tinge
because
this, of material?
Yeah, because the sambandha is not complete in Vasudev and Devaki's case. It is not complete. They are not aspiring for Krishna as a son in terms of like Yashodamayi. You notice that, she didn't even know that he was Vishnu. So the sambandha is not complete here. They wanted Vishnu as a son. It is almost as if, I am the parent of Vishnu. I am the parent of Narayan. I am the parent of, the Lord. It is not that there is complete Vatsalya Bhav where they want to express themselves like Mother Yashoda. There's a little bit of a distinction. So they had to undergo such austerities and such purification. And then there was also this bewilderment that we saw in this chapter early on, where she didn't know how to deal with him because he was forearmed. She was worried that the population would start thinking that, she's not well situated, that she's making a claim that she has Vishnu as a son and so on and so forth. So this is not a pure desire in terms of our understanding of Vraja. It is not. Of just wanting to have him as a son. This has other connotations of understanding that he is supreme and then having him as a son. There's a little bit of a difference between the two. Okay? Understanding him as supreme, understanding his wonderful qualities and wanting him as a son is different from wanting him to be a son. Wanting to take care, which is what happens in Vraja. It's a different sentiment altogether. Yes.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you for your class, Prabhu. But my question is based on the principle of simplicity you mentioned.
Right.
That a simple life is a mode of goodness, which is a springboard to the mode of transcendence. So, Prabhu, my question is sometimes, this is a preaching movement, so sometimes you have to take risks. Sometimes certain services may invite complexity in your life.
Right.
So does the principle of taking risk contradict the principle of simplicity?
The goal has to be fixed. If the goal is very clear and it's very fixed and the devotee is sincere, constantly trying to validate their desires in respect to the goal and the process that is required in terms of nitya karma, then there could be attempts to make things happen. But the best way to go through these kind of situations is to wake up in the morning and then sit before the deities and tell him that if I have any desires that are going to make me or take me away from Srila Prabhupada's service, sabotage those desires. Sabotage those projects. This is the best way to do it. Pray to the deities before you even start anything. You may have desires, we may have desires, we may have very complex and very simple desires. But the best way to ensure that we are on track is to practically take the help of Krishna and tell him, Krishna, if my desires are not going to allow me to be a better servant of Srila Prabhupada, sabotage them.
And what about if the services come to you? Not that you thought about a particular service, but it comes to you, may invite complexity, then...
Yeah, that is then Trinadapi Sunichena Tharori Vasahishnuna Amana Manadena.
So that's ordained by Krishna.
Yeah, we accept the environment that is being given to us and we make and do our very best in trying to move forward in that environment. And that environment and that particular point of being given a certain service in certain positions is exactly what we need for us to unfold. This understanding has to be there. Even if it were to be given because of our karmic reactions and our propensities, if this understanding is there, that Krishna has somehow arranged this mercifully so that I can make advancement, then we would be able to move forward under all circumstances because we are positioning ourselves properly.
So you shouldn't sabotage that service on your own accord?
I'm sorry?
If a service comes to you, then you shouldn't sabotage or reject it.
Because no, we accept it. But then we should have this desire at a more simplistic level. That Srila Prabhupada, if there's anything I'm desiring which is not in line with your mission, let it be sabotaged. That should be the desire in the morning. But then we accept everything else. And then we accept everything else as if Prabhupada has arranged it for our purification. And then it would become the vehicle of purification, even though it may not be intended for that purpose. Does it make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
See, one principle that we have to understand, the principle of success in this movement is not success. The principle of success in this movement is not success in being able to achieve something. The principle of success in this movement is to be able to chant Sadhu Sangha, Namakirtana, Bhagavad Shravana in higher principles. That is the principle of success. If we don't have a proper barometer for us to be able to measure success, we could go way off. That's the reason why I'm trying to say that it's very important to write all this down, etch it down, and say that this is the barometer of success. If certain endeavor, certain activity is going to allow and enhance me to be able to make advancement, and this is my only desire, then we accept everything as if being arranged by Lord Chaitanya, and then we make advancement. We don't really calculate so much. Does it make sense, Prabhu?
Yeah. Just one more point, Prabhu?
Sure, if you don't mind.
Just on the success point you mentioned, so you said the barometer is a five potent...
Right. The process, nitya karma. That is that which we have to engage in for us to move forward. So that which is going to facilitate our movement.
So can there be an instance where you can be externally successful in a particular service or whatever, but these five things may not be up to scratch?
This is a very tough question to answer. No, I don't have the barometer of success, Prabhu, personally. Maybe there's praman for other things, yeah. But personally, for me, it's not a barometer of success. It is not.
Okay.
It is not. For me, it is not. Because my objective is to chant Shuddhanam. Mm. If my objective of wanting to chant the pure name and being able to engage in Nitya Karma is not being met, then I will be worried, very worried, very, very worried. But I would have the mood of constantly accepting the environment which Krishna is giving me, saying, you have arranged it, Krishna. Thank you. And that would allow me to transform that environment, which is constant, complex, into something which is simple as well. Does it make sense? You see, in Srila Prahlad Charita, Sri Mahaprabhu used to listen to Prahlad Charita and Dhruva Charita on a daily basis. We hear about it from our acharyas. Prahlad Charita, he was practically accepting a very complex environment that Krishna is arranging it. And that allowed him to continue the chanting process. You see? So the point which I'm trying to make here is not so much in terms of wanting to change things. The point which I'm trying to make here is more of an internal mindset of having proper goals internally. And then accepting whatever is being given externally as if it's being arranged because those internal aspirations are present. And then acting upon it with courage. This is Trinadapi Sunichena. Not so much that we change things and want to be rebels and so on and so forth. But more so to simply have a mindset which is fixed on the goal. And then externally, we can make changes automatically. Krishna would give us the power to make changes. You know, it has been demonstrated by many generations of our devotees of being able to accept the environment. It has been demonstrated. And then acting upon it as if Krishna has given that opportunity, then it would automatically unfold. Yeah, Prabhu, yeah.
You're discussing a lot about Sambandha Gyan. Now, I have a question. I have a statement in Jiva Dharma, which I find very puzzling. I just want to know what you think about this. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, when one's Sambandha Gyan is complete, one has attained the Majjhima platform, and then one can chant the pure name on the Majjhima platform. So So it seems that Kanishtha means Sambandha Gyan is incomplete, and then when you hit the Majjhim level, you have complete Sambandha Gyan and you're chanting the pure name. But from what you're just explaining, you're discussing Sambandha Gyan in something that's like the Swarupa has been revealed to you, and it's something more than that. So I'm trying to understand why there's kind of almost like there's two definitions of Sambandha Gyan. I'm trying to puzzle over this. Thank you.
Sure, Prabhu. Well, I will try and make an attempt to simply address what my understanding is. So I'm not saying that I have understood it completely. I'm far, far away. I'm still struggling to chant. So the understanding that I have is that the Madhyama platform, which is being referred to, is the stage where one attains the point of bhava, begins bhava, where they attain Sambandha Gyan and they are being able to move forward. And then the Uttamadhikari is one who is completely immersed in prema, which is the other side. Then they come down and then they start preaching. So the definition which I was talking about is that for us to be able to move forward, I'm not saying that I was talking about prema, I'm talking about someone who is in anartha nivritti has to have an aspiration for deeper Sambandha Gyan. Anartha nivritti is complete, then the Sambandha and the mellow starts getting revealed at Nishta in slow, steady processes. It starts getting revealed, certain amount of information starts coming through, and then one progresses and crystallizes such experiences because they have the ability to accelerate. There are no more anarthas which are taking away energies. Then one reaches the platform of developing a deeper level of Sambandha at the stage of Bhav, where everything begins. Bhakti begins at Bhav, and then the Kleshagni, all the Kleshas are gone, and then good fortune arises, and then one is able to consolidate and condense and move forward. This is the understanding I have. And I was talking about the fact is that it is Sambandha at the level of where we are. If we are Kanishtha Adhikaris, our Sambandha is mixed because we have this bodily identification, we have prioritizations based on the body, we have so many other different parameters that we judge ourselves based on. And as we make advancement, and the Sambandha becomes revealed and the mellow becomes revealed to a greater extent, then it gives us the ability to act. So I was giving you that kind of a statement. I was just making a statement. Does it seem contradictory to what you've read in Jaiva Dharma? Perhaps you could give me a reference and I will go and look it up as well. Yeah, I would be very happy to look it up. Does it make sense? Or that was, I was just explaining my understanding of it. Okay, that's all right. So let me know what the reference is in Jaiva Dharma and I will look it up. My idea was that Sambandha is something, Krishna Sambandha is we start out as being Dasa Dasa Anudas, and then the other mellows are being slowly, steadily revealed as we chant the holy names, and we reach the point of complete knowledge. That was the kind of explanation that I was giving. And until you reach that point, there's confusion in what to choose, what to do, and what not to do. That was the point I was just making. That's all. Very simple program. I don't know much, so I take up things which I speak into a certain way. So we'll correct myself if there's a need. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, thank you, Prabhu. So I can theoretically understand how a grahastha may need to simplify his life because it can be so complicated. But I'm just thinking like Srila Prabhupada, he was as a grahastha before. But one of my questions is, in his sannyas ashram, how did he show simplicity in that life? How was Prabhupada an example of showing simplicity during that sannyas, during that time, because he was traveling everywhere doing so many things? So was he actually showing simplicity as well, and how was it shown, and what we can learn?
We want to define, again, we don't want to target the mode of goodness, but we want to understand that the mode of goodness is the platform that we need for us to be able to make advancement. So Srila Prabhupada was not targeting the mode of goodness. He was practically acting according to the principles where he was wanting to encourage Nitya Karma. He was wanting to make sure that devotees had opportunity for Sadhu Sangha. He had opportunities for Namakirtan. He was doing that. And then depending on the complexity of the environment, he was making arrangements based on the nature of the devotees. He was giving them service based on their nature and so on and so forth. So one of the most remarkable aspects of Srila Prabhupada's existence is where devotees who have served with him very closely used to observe that his nature never used to change based on where he was. Whether he was in a palace or whether he was in a hut in Mayapur, he was always what he was. He never used to change. That whole change never used to occur. So it was almost as if he had the mood where it was very focused. And he was just moving from one environment to the other, wanting to strengthen it. That's all. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.